Do you ever feel like a plastic bag drifting through the wind, wanting to start again? Do you ever feel this so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Do you ever feel already buried deep, 6 feet under screens and no one seems to hear a thing? Do you know that there's still a chance for you? There's a spark in you. You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just own the night like the 4th of July. 'Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show 'em what you're worth. Make 'em go as you shoot across the sky.
Hello, my darlings. How are you? Merry meet. This is the Sit a Spell Show, and I'm your host, Lisa Lee, and I've got a great show ahead. It is March 14th, so we have got some moon stuff ahead. I've got the phenomenal Adrian Lee, who is going to bring you some news, and Tom is going to do a spell for you. We've got a very interesting guest that I know that you are going to love. I thought how we're going to start out the show is with a song. So I chose a song, Calling on Angels by Train. And the reason I chose the song is because it reminds me of my dear, dear friend Patty. So Patty, this song is for you. Love you, sweetheart.
I need a sign to let me know you're here. All of these lines are being crossed over the atmosphere. I need to know if things are gonna look up. 'Cause I feel us drowning in a sea spilled from a cup. There is no place safe and no safe place to put my head. And you can feel the world shake from the words that I said.
Oh,
That was Calling All You Angels by Train, and that was a special shout-out to my darling, dear, dear friend, Patty. Patty Lakeman, love you, honey!
Moongazer.
Okay, so I know that this has absolutely nothing to do with the moon, but did you know that March is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Month? That means all the chocolate chip cookies that you could ever possibly want to eat or that you could stomach, and they have zero calories. I think it's like a law. So eat your chocolate chip cookies. This is the month that you can get away with it. You know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. It is freaking chocolate chip cookie month, kids. Okay, so it is March 14th, and we are in a waning moon. And that means that you're going to do rituals and spells that will get rid of things. So any means of working that you're doing, it's going to be more effective if you kind of get into that mindset. So instead of doing magic to get rid of money, which I can't imagine anybody would actually do that, but anyway, think of it more as banishing poverty in your personal life. Instead of trying to find love, you're getting rid of loneliness. Instead of increasing your scores, you know, think about banishing the tendency to write down the wrong answers, you know, things like that. So it's all about banishing and getting rid of. If you stay in that mindset, then your magical moon workings will be far more effective. The theory to the waning moon workings is this: when the moon goes, it takes whatever you're trying to get rid of along with it. That works for me. If you're a vegetable gardener type, then the waning moon is a time for planting crops that grow underground, like carrots and onions, garlic, or even potatoes. Save the above ground crops like tomato plants and pumpkins, corns, watermelons, or berry bees or whatever for waxing moon. In the autumn, the waning moon is also a good time to trim back those roses before it gets too cold, and it's a good time to plant daffodils or crocus bulbs because if that's the time of the year when it wanes, the bulbs will settle down for the nice long sleep until spring. I don't know, do you feel less energetic during the waning moon, especially like the last week of it? Don't worry, a lot of people do. Unfortunately, the unaffected bosses, teachers, and friends or small children in your life, they're not going to be really all that terribly sympathetic, but that's what happens to me. I don't know, have you noticed that this last week, there has been a lot of people that are really, really cranky. There's been a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, misunderstandings. I actually thought for a minute there that we were heading into a Mercury in retrograde the way things were going. Turns out, no. Mars is in retrograde, though, and that causes a lot of arguing and a lot of fights. And then we also got hit with the new moon, the full moon at the same time. And then there was that solar flare that attacked, not attacked literally, but it hit us. So that was like a trifecta of holy crap. So if you noticed that last week everybody was just cranky and there was a lot of douchebaggery out there. I just made up a word, douchebaggery. Just a lot of, you know, not normal behavior. It just wasn't okay. Well, part of that was because of this trifecta of, you know, the full moon, Mars in retrograde, and that sun solar storm that hit us. That was like a nasty blast of ick out there. Luckily for us, all of that is going away. Thank God. So if you were kind of arguing a lot last week, chalk it up to that. Not normal behavior. Everything is going to go back to normal, and there will be peace and harmony in the land all over again. Anyway, so back to the moon. During this waning time, some people actually have more energy. Well, it's also springtime now, so this is a perfect time to clear out your garage, clean your cupboards, clear your closets, donate stuff. This is a time to get rid of things. So what better thing to do than to create a positive atmosphere and energy in your own home and in your own life? Get rid of the crap. So now is the time, regardless if you like to spring clean or not, this is the perfect, perfect opportunity, my darlings. Clean out everything. Get rid of it. This is a time for renewal.
The world can be a scary and unpredictable place. It's easy to feel like you have no control over the safety and well-being of your family. There are steps you can take today, now, to gain control. Visit myfamilyissafe.com for complete step-by-step instructions for building survival kits for each member of your family, your home, and your cars. Detailed shopping lists make the kit building process a snap. MyFamilyIsSafe.com. Prepare. Protect. Survive. The safety of our loved ones is our greatest concern. Visit MyFamilyIsSafe.com right now. Control is available.
One of my all-time favorite bands, the Midnight Rounders, they're like a local folk group. They are having a CD release party. They're dropping their next CD. The release party is going to be free, which is awesome, and it's open to everybody. It's 7 o'clock on Saturday, March 31st, 2012, and it's at the Doubletree Hotel in St. Louis Park. Great, great music. Pagan, love them. And I've played some of their music on here before. Brad Murphy, Teresa Frank, Bonnie Hannah Powers, they're all at the top of their form. They've got these two CDs that are just phenomenal. So I'll play you some of their, or another one of their songs right now. Seriously though, go to their CD release party. It's going to be off the charts, super fun, don't want to miss it. I will be there, of course. Seriously, come. So let's listen to one of their songs. Here is Murphy's Midnight Rounders with The Wreck of Modern Pagans.
Plastic handled ninja swords and simulated crystal orbs in unread print of Ray's Big Blue. He'll teach young women what he knows if they take off all their clothes and spiral dance into his bedroom. She won't say marry me because she's a vegetarian. She's afraid it violates the reed. She only reads Fiona Horn and believes she is reborn from an ancient Pictish queen. It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I want to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
Pixelated motherboards and three-pronged grounded power cords. His coven is a chat room on Yahoo. His high priest is in NYC, his priestess is in Germany. The quarters call from no one has a clue. They read their screens by candlelight, and each one does his own great rite consisting of the Alton Antar Keys. F7 scribes a circle round, and F8 takes the circle down. F9 types a hearty blessed be.
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I want to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
Why do people laugh his way and shake their heads and walk away when he says he's a Virgo through and through? He wants to study Thelema and the mystic Kabbalah, but Hebrew words are giving him the blues. He understands the Sephiroth from Kether down to Yetzirah. He even knows what's meant by 661. He won't call his tradition witchcraft. It's more like H.P. Lovecraft. All hail the Necronomicon.
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I want to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
All he wears is gothic black, and tattooed on his gothic back's a scene of Jesus hanging on the cross. The reference is cursory, and hanging from his rosaries, a pentacle he says that someone lost. He only listens to death metal, cause he says it's spiritual. He wants to fake a child like Jimmy Page. Mom's patient with his attitude. Her path is strictly druid. She hopes that he'll come around someday.
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I want to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
He learned his sense of history from RPGs like D&D. He thinks Gary Gygax is a god. His paladin keeps getting trounced by wizard clerics who jump out and turn his +2 arrows into mud. The magic that he learns from books like D&D and Terry Brooks he tried to use in Circle once or twice. Last time he woke up in a funk, in a Mitsubishi trunk, 'cause demons really don't play nice.
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I wanna be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
He's TOS and OTO and BTW Borneo. His voodoo priestess grew up in KC. He says his first is Frostian, his second is Arthurian, his third he got while studying Reiki. He reads books by Bonowitz, Grimassi, and Z. Budapest, in volumes signed by Raven Silver Moon. His path may seem a bit deranged, eclecticism is his game. I think he's added Baptist in there too.
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I want to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
The Viking path's a one for him, and it's just not a silly whim. His great, 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 great granddad did it too. His songs use funny sounding words. 1,000 years they ain't been heard, and some of them are written in ancient runes. He looks upon Paganistan as something to be conquered, and his horn is always filled with Peter Brew. He laughs at silly pagan folk and thinks he knows more than the Pope. Is Mjolnir stuck right up his ass a true?
It's fun to be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Make the rules up as you go along. I wanna be a ceremonial Wiccan druid shaman. Come back in another life if I get it wrong.
Was that not the best song ever? First time I heard that song, I laughed so hard, because you know what? There are so many people out there that just match that song perfectly. I just had to play that for you. It's just the funnest song ever. And granted, you kind of have to have been, you know, practicing for a while to get it, but not everything on there. I just thought that was just the best song ever, so I had to share that. That's one of my very favorite of the Murphy's Midnight Rounders. So go to their CD drop launch. It is going to be a blasty blast, and you will hear all kinds of more songs that are fun and thought-provoking. I have some events coming up. I've got Witchy Night tomorrow night, where we're covering a whole load of fun things, including doing an Ostara ritual, so that will be fun. On March 31st, we've got a seance going in the Victorian Seance Room at Heaven and Earth Essentials. That's 8 o'clock. We've got Introduction to Buddhism. That starts March 24th, and that is from 2 till 3:30. It's also March 31st and April 7th, and that is the cost of $25 per person, and there will be snacks. What else do we have? We have got a March 24th at night on Saturday. We've got a paranormal investigation at a very historic building with the International Paranormal Society, or at least a couple of us from there are going to be doing that. Got to pre-register because we've only got a couple of spaces left. So if you go to heavenandearthessentials.com,
You can register for actually all of these. We've also got yoga on Mondays and Wednesdays every week at Heaven and Earth Essentials. We've got Reiki and Tarot on Monday through Friday. Usually the preferred time is Tuesdays and Thursdays, just to let you know. And we opened up a gallery, an art gallery here in Sauk Center, and it is called Bless This Hat. We're showcasing local artists. We've got just an amazing mixture of different types of studies there. It's really phenomenal. We had the open house or the launch on, what was that, Friday. And there were so many people there. It was unbelievable. But we had just this really cool eclectic crowd there. So I've never been to an art exhibition before. This was really super fun. So come out and see Bless This Hat Gallery, art gallery. Go to heavenandearthessentials.com. That is heavenandearthessentials.com to check out all of our upcoming classes and events that we've got going on. I've got spells up on my website for you, spells and information and all of that. All you have to do for that is go to empoweringthedivine.com. Again, in my best radio voice, that is empoweringthedivine.com. Shoot me an email if you've got song requests or if you want to be on the show, if you've got something great to say that you think our audience and our listeners would like to hear, let me know. I would absolutely have you on the show. What else? If you've got questions, if you've got answers, you know, anything, shoot me an email. You can get a hold of me through my website, empoweringthedivine.com. I answer every single email. Sometimes not until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, because I am one person trying to do the work of 72 people. At least that's how it feels lately. I need a day off, kids. So anyway, empoweringthedivine.com.
What's in the news?
I would like to welcome Adrian Lee, who is going to be my co-host for the night. Adrian used to be on Darkness Radio. He was the national and international correspondent for the news, and he was the co-host. He is going to do our news for us tonight. Adrian, what do you have for us?
Hi, Lisa. Hello, America. Welcome to a weird and wonderful world of the news, of the strange, bizarre, and all things witchy. If you listen every week to Sid a Spell, I admire your taste. If you've just tuned in for the very first time by accident, then I admire your luck. So hold on to your pointy hats and follow me to Lancashire, England, where a witch's cottage has been unearthed near Pendle Hill. Engineers said they were stunned to unearth a 17th century cottage, complete with a cat's skeleton, during a construction project. The cottage was discovered near Lower Black Moss Reservoir in the village of Barley, in the shadow of Pendle Hill. Archaeologists brought in by United Utilities to survey the area found the building under a grassy mound. Historians are now speculating that the well-preserved cottage could have belonged to one of the Pendle witches. The building contained a sealed room where the bones of a cat were bricked into the wall. It is believed the cat was buried alive to protect the cottage inhabitants from evil spirits. A tactic worth remembering, I believe, the next time my cat randomly decides to give me a dabbing as I walk past with its paws. I'm watching the cat now as we speak, and the plaster is being mixed.
Run, Bear, run.
Carl Saunders, Utilities Project Manager, said, "It's not often you come across a fairy tale cottage complete with a witch's cat." Not often. How many times has he come across that? Stop, everyone. Stop work. It's one of those fairy tale cottages you read so much about, where the cat's bricked up in the wall. The building is in remarkable condition. You can walk through it and get a real sense that you're actually peering into the past. Pendle Hill has a real aura about it. It's hard not to be affected by the place. Even before we discovered the building, there were lots of jokes from the lads about broomsticks and black cats. The finders really stunned us all. Simon Entwistle, an expert on the Pendle witches, said, "In terms of significance, it's like discovering Tutankhamun's tomb." I have to disagree with him there to a certain degree, of course, because Tutankhamun's tomb was one of the greatest discoveries of the 20th century, and all the gold and treasures fill up the majority of the British Museum, where in actual fact, what we're looking at here is a few stone ruins and a skeletal cat. We're just a few months away from the 400th anniversary of the Pendle Witch Trials, and here there's an incredibly rare find right in the heart of witching country. Cats feature prominently in folklore about witches. Whoever consigned this cat to such a horrible fate was clearly seeking protection from evil spirits. Frank Yaiko from MP Archaeology, who unearthed the building, said, "It's like discovering your own Pompeii. We rarely get the opportunity to work with something well preserved as this. As soon as we started digging, we found the tops of doors and knew we were onto something special. The building is a microcosm for the rise and the fall of the area, from the time of the Pendle Witches to the Industrial Age. There are layers of local history right before your very eyes. The engineering project has been put on hold while the archaeologists complete their investigations of the site. The building also contains a 19th century kitchen range still in its original position." I have to say, it's very rare from a historical point of view to actually find a building that they actually consider to be part of the Pendle Witch setup, because that goes back to the 17th century. And I think you're aware that in some buildings, you can actually find behind fireplaces and under plasterwork small little jars and vials that were meant to be used to ward off evil, that contain things like fingernails and urine and bits of spell. I mean, are those things you've come across?
Yeah, we actually do that today, not obviously.
You've urinated in a bucket and cut your fingernails.
Well, I did need a mani-pedi, but no, we do put things in certain spots. Certainly not, well, I shouldn't say everyone doesn't do urine and fingernails and stuff like that, but we do always put things in specific spots. Remember the one house that we were in, and there was a little door in the fireplace? Remember that?
That's right, I do recall.
Yep, well, we had certain special something-somethings in there, too. And I would also like to point out for the listeners that if you could hear a bunch of banging in the background, that was our cat, Bear. Remember Princess Squeaky Bear?
And the plasterer having fun.
She was jumping all over the place. She knew that you were talking about cats. And she was just going nuts. So
it's like being a war correspondent. I'm trying to read the news here, and there's things falling down and fire, and I'm under enemy fire here. The fact that I can read this at all is remarkable.
That would be Bear.
Okay, staying in Lancashire, so you can put your broom down for the moment. It was announced this week that Lancaster Castle is to open for the witch trial anniversary. Previously unseen areas of the castle could be open to the public during the summer. The Duchy of Lancaster, which manages it on behalf of the Queen, hopes to open up more of the castle as part of the Diamond Jubilee celebrations. The Duchy will officially take possession from the Ministry of Justice next week. Currently, only part of the Grade 1 listed building is actually open to the public. The Lancashire Witch Trials were also held at the castle, and this year is the 400th anniversary of those trials. Castle manager Colin Perry said that the story of the witches is perennially popular, with people visiting the castle specifically to hear the story. Mr. Penny said many parts of the castle associated with the witches were actually off limits at the moment, but there would be a lot of interest if more of the castle was opened up. He said probably the most interesting would be what's known as the dungeon, underneath a tower which has become known as the Witches' Tower. You descend a very steep flight of steps into almost total darkness, and there are iron rings in the floor, which is believed to be where people were chained. It is widely believed that this room, in which the Lancashire witches were imprisoned prior to their trial, is now going to be opened, and this is where they'd be immediately before their execution. 12 people were charged with the murders of 10 people by the use of witchcraft during the Lancashire witch trials in 1612. 10 were found guilty and hanged, one died while awaiting trial, and one was found not to be guilty.
Obviously you're English.
I do claim to be, yeah. The accent's a giveaway.
A little bit. Have you been there?
I have, yeah. I say I have been there. I was taken there as a child when I was very young. And it's called the Black Country. And you go up through Birmingham, up to Lancashire. And it's very themed. They have, I do recall as a child, that we'd go through this area. And for the local tourist trade, they have witches' hats and brooms for sale. So there's tourist shops all along this area that actually embrace this idea and actually use it as a tourist attraction. These trials remind me of the very similar trials that took place in Salem. And although I've never been to Salem, I would imagine there's a similar sort of thing taking place where you would have shops specifically designated as having witchy memorabilia and historical things. So I would think the two are very similar in terms of how they present themselves. But I have been there, but it was probably 1978, and that was a very long time ago.
I think you should take your wife there.
Well, I'd be happy to do that if you pay for the ticket. Okay, having mourned briefly for the sad demise of a witch's cat, I have to compound your sadness, grief and misery, I'm afraid, by having to inform you that the oldest sheep in the world has died on Lewis, on the Western Isles of Britain this week. An ear tag on the black-faced ewe, named Methuselina, showed that it was 25 years old and 11 months. In 2009, her owner, John McIver of North Tolster Lewis, put her longevity down to her still having most of her teeth, allowing her to graze with ease. I would suggest, though, that eyesight was perhaps in decline rather than the teeth, if she appears to have apparently walked off a cliff. So the teeth were fine, but the eyesight was going. That same year, the recognised holder of the world's oldest sheep title died at the age of 23. She was called Lucky, and she died in a heatwave. You're not supposed to be laughing. This is sad.
I'm so
this is sad.
I've got tears.
This sheep was the previous record holder was an Australian sheep called Lucky, who died in a heatwave.
Sorry.
This is obviously a new meaning for the word Lucky. I had previously not been aware of. And it's not the best thing to have, is it? A woolly coat in a heatwave, I would suggest. Mr. McIver said Methuselina had also met an unfortunate end. He said, the sad news is that Methuselina is no more. She passed away, and I wouldn't say peacefully. I found her at the bottom of a rock. She had gone over a cliff and met her demise that way at a grand old age of 25 years. Apparently, there were no signs of depression, and she never left a note. Do you think Mr. McIver realised that one of his sheep was missing instantly? Because every time he went to count them, he fell asleep and had to start again.
Oh, God. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
Lucky
Methuselina. Oh. It makes me wonder who the record holder is. We'll have to do some research for next week. In a natural progression, we move seamlessly from sheep suicide to the sinking of the Titanic and the revelation that it may now have been the work of the moon. Headlines this week read, did the moon sink the Titanic? Freak tide causes icebergs to fill shipping lanes 100 years ago. Ooh. We're really on top of the news, aren't we, that I'm reporting on things from 100 years ago. We'll get there in the end. The iceberg that sank the Titanic was sent on its deadly path by the closest approaching of the moon to the Earth in 1,400 years, say astronomers. A once-in-a-lifetime lunar event created a super high tide on January the 12th, 1912, setting loose a deadly fleet of icebergs 3 months before the Titanic sank on April the 14th, 1912, with a loss of approximately 1,500 lives. The tide dislodged icebergs from shallow waters off the coast of Labrador and Newfoundland, filling shipping lanes with icebergs. The ice field in the area the Titanic sank was so thick with icebergs, responding rescue ships were forced to slow down. The event January the 4th was the closest approach to the moon to the Earth in more than 1,400 years, and it maximised the moon's tide rising forces on the Earth's oceans. That's remarkable, says Texas State Physics faculty member Donald Olson. All these factors contributed to abnormally high sea levels, which helped dislodge grounding icebergs and sent them into the shipping lanes of the North Atlantic. Normally, icebergs remain in place and cannot resume moving southwards until they've melted enough to refloat or a high enough tide frees them. A single iceberg can become stuck multiple times on its journey southwards, a process that can take several years. As icebergs travel south, they often drift into shallow water and pause along the coasts of Labrador and Newfoundland. But an extremely high spring tide could refloat them, and the ebb tide would carry them back into the Labrador Current, where the icebergs would resume drifting southwards, Olson said. That could explain the abundant icebergs in the spring of 1912. We don't claim to know exactly where the Titanic iceberg was in January 1912. Nobody can know that, but this is a plausible scenario. Of course, the ultimate cause of the accident was that the ship struck an iceberg. The Titanic failed to slow down, even after receiving several wireless messages warning of the ice ahead, Olson said. They went full speed into the region with icebergs. That's what really sank the ship, but the lunar connection may explain how an unusually large number of icebergs got into the path of the Titanic. Did I actually mention to you that when I was a child and I was in primary school, and I would suggest I was probably about 6 or 7, there was a lady that lived in East London and her name was Mrs. Hart. And she actually survived the Titanic. She was a very small girl herself when the Titanic sank. And she lived in the local area, and she came in and gave a talk to all the children sat there in the assembly about what it was like to survive the Titanic. And obviously at the time, as a small child, you don't really have a concept of the context of that and how important that is. But she told us one story that stuck in my mind that I'll share with you. She actually lost her dad on the ship. Her dad was one of the ones that stayed behind and drowned. And she mentioned that as she was being lowered into the lifeboat, her mum actually got out of the lifeboat and ran back to their cabin, as she wondered if she'd see her mum again. And her main mum came back a couple of minutes later. And you would have thought that if someone rushed back to the cabin, she was going to collect jewellery, she was going to collect belongings, things that were expensive. She actually came back with her dress filled with oranges. She emptied out a fruit bowl into her dress to come back with, because she didn't know how long they'd be in the lifeboat for, and she thought it'd be of interest if everyone had an orange. So I remember her specifically telling us that story when I was small, and it's actually quite remarkable to think that, you know, I had an opportunity to meet a survivor of the Titanic.
Is there anybody still alive from the Titanic, do you know?
No, everyone's dead now. There was a lady that was American, and she died fairly recently in the last 5 to 10 years, I believe, and she was very strong in her opinion that the Titanic is a graveyard and shouldn't be desecrated. Mm-hmm. So it's only in recent times, after her death, unfortunately, that they then went and raided what was left of the Titanic. And the Titanic exhibition that's going around was pretty much put together after she died, because they didn't want to go and pillage the wreckage while there was a survivor still alive that didn't want it to be messed mm-hmm. around with. So unfortunately, they waited for her to die and then went down and did it anyway.
I've always had a real connection to the Titanic, to the people of the Titanic. I don't know if it's my fear of dark water or what, but I've always felt like this strange sort of a kinship to them.
I know whenever we go near an iceberg, you move away from me.
Well, because it's chilly.
It's chilly. But it's a little on the chilly side.
It's a little chilly.
Okay, we find ourselves washed up on the shore of the Philippines now, in a half-deflated dinghy with a half-eaten seagull and a bottle of urine for company. We're icebergs. Half a bottle of urine would be worse, to be fair, wouldn't it, than a full bottle? We started drinking the urine before the water supply ran out. Icebergs won't be a problem for the Philippines unless there's some serious climate changes taking place in the near future. There was actually an article written in the BBC this week by a reporter called Kate McGowan, and she talks about her experiences of going to the Philippines and actually looking for witches. So if I can read you some of her magazine article here, there's some very interesting points. It says, healing rituals and bad spirits on a Philippine island. Siquijor is more than 7,000 islands in the Philippines. This is just one of them, and the island's called Siquijor. It has tropical sun, white sands, and an azure sea, but it's almost famous for its witchcraft. So how do you go about looking for a witch, she exclaims. The BBC's mate Kate McGowan asked the questions, and she's never had to ask before, and she wasn't quite sure what to ask for or where to go, so she actually rang up the tourist information department and asked if they could help her find her a witch. And they replied, "We don't have any witches," was their first reply, which did not seem at all that promising. But after a bit more discussion, it seems that Siquijor's witches, well, the good ones anyway, have recently undergone a rebranding exercise. They have now called themselves traditional healers. But what about the bad witches, she asked. And they then replied, "Oh, we don't promote them," came the rather sensible answer, obviously. So armed with a list of approved witches, she set off for her first call, which was to a woman who was a famous healer on the island. She's 86 years old. Her name's Konzing Aki. And she's the only person still practicing what's called bulo bulo, which is a technique to remove evil spirits. It says her heavily lined face reflects the ancient history of her art. Murmuring in a special language, she adds a small stone to a glass of water, then moves it around her patient's body, blowing air into it through a bamboo straw. The water gradually becomes cloudy, and apparently that is the sickness coming out of the person. Konzing is not quite what is imagined to be a witch. She's devoutly Catholic and sees no contradiction between her religious faith and her traditional spells. In fact, she says she receives her powers from the Christ child in a dream, and she does a quick sign of the cross before starting each treatment. She does have a black cat, but it's not what it seems, and basically has no essential role in the proceedings. This cat's probably more concerned about being integrated into the plaster work at some point, I would suggest. She holds these consultations in a small room behind her son's karaoke bar. And I'm sure there's a joke there somewhere, but for the life of me, I can't find it. If you do have a joke that's based around a witch practicing behind the back of a karaoke bar in the Philippines, do feel free to write in and we'll include it next week. Francisco Alidad is even more of a contradiction than Konzing, because he is essentially living the life of a modern Filipino. but Francisco's most important possession is a large stick which he claims can identify bad spirits. He believes these spirits are everywhere, on the side of the road, floating around in the air, and even under the ground, just waiting to get into people to cause illness or body or of the mind. Francisco says there are ghosts of the dead or fallen angels on the island that need to be expelled. When his services are called upon, he identifies what is wrong with the patient by seeing how the stick reacts to suggestions of different diseases. I imagine this is almost like dowsing rods, that he has this stick and it moves depending on the questions he asks. If it is a physiological problem, a change of behaviour, or a bout of anger or depression, Francisco has a different approach. He prods the stick in the ground around them and around the patient's house to try and identify the spirits causing the malaise and tells them to go away. Through the power of the stick, they then do that. I've just had a fabulous idea. Do you think we could start selling sticks? There's obviously some sort of... There's a tree outside full of them at the moment, and I'm thinking we could get on eBay and we could just start selling sticks, if that's a possibility.
You can go to empoweringthedivine.com.
For your stick needs. Or you can go to Sticks R Us or Stick Hut. On the opposite side of the island, another family is also busy tackling evil in a different way. Dios Daddy proudly shows this lady, who's doing the report, Kate, her father's herbal potions, which since his death, she can alone administer. These ointments are only made once a year. More than 150 different types of herbs and tree roots are needed, and all of them must be gathered between Ash Wednesday and Good Friday. They are then rubbed into the affected areas of the patient's body through a cloud of smoke to ward off yet more of these ever-present bad spirits. Now, what I have to ask is, this is a very small Filipino island, one of 7,000. You could probably walk across it in a day. I am amazed that they have so many witches on the island dispelling evil and dispelling bad things. It makes me wonder where all this comes from. Is on the other half of the island all the bad witches and they're throwing it all over, and all the good witches are on the other side of the island kind of throwing it all back?
Baseball bat hitting it back.
Well, it's an interesting concept.
A baseball stick.
Well, what I considered, I actually did a bit of research and I discovered that until recently the island never had a hospital. So the suggestion is, and this is only me putting two and two together, is that if you don't have medical facilities and you're a very small island and you're kind of stuck in the middle there of the ocean without any contact too much of the outside world, I'm under the impression that they're doing all of these kinds of spells and warding off evil and taking away disease because they don't have any other way of doing it. There's no contemporary medical science that's allowing them to get rid of athlete's foot, for example. So they go in there with a straw, a glass of water and a small stone and everybody's happy. But it's interesting how these things come about in isolation.
Makes sense.
I'm perfectly happy with that.
Okay.
From treating the gravely ill to actually the graveyard now in one fell swoop, Radnor Street Graveyard has been around since 1881 and holds 33,000 deceased Brits. It's only recently, however, that badgers have become a problem. It seems the tenuous, it's a very tenuous story, I can assure you. It seems the tenacious badgers have burrowed under numerous graves and are bringing bones to the surface, a distressing situation for the relatives of those interred there. Mark Sutton of the Friends of Radnor Street Cemetery told the Swindon Advertiser that he thinks badgers are lovely, but wishes they didn't like the cemetery so much. In some places they have burrowed right underneath the graves, toppling some headstones, and more disturbingly, depositing human bones on the surface. 2 or 3 years ago, I received a phone call from a distressed person to say vandals had struck. I visited the cemetery to see the grass completely torn up. I have never seen it so bad. It wasn't vandals, but the cute badgers. However, a spokesperson for the Swindon Town Council says nothing can be done to remove the grave-disturbing critters because the cemetery was designated a nature reserve in 2005, making it illegal for the badger, for them to badger the badgers. I was actually thinking there that a lot of graveyards in Britain are actually nature reserves now. Our graveyards go back in many areas to the 1830s and 1840s because we had very large cholera outbreaks at the turn of that century, and they believed the smell of rotting bodies in the graveyards. With the Industrial Revolution, there was more people coming into the cities and the graveyards couldn't cope. So, in actual fact, what's happened in Britain now is that we have many graveyards from that period of history, but there's no money to look after them.
Right.
Several of the graveyards in London are as big as 320 square acres, and you just haven't got the money to keep the upgrade of that, especially when the people died 150 years ago and there's no relatives around anymore. So a lot of them have actually been made into nature reserves, because in the middle of London you've got such a big piece of land, which is unique in such a large city, and you can actually have nature taking place in it relatively undisturbed. But for me, taking photographs and amorous couples occasionally.
Or both.
Or both, in fact. Well, me taking photographs of amorous couples, is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah.
Licenses to remove badgers are only granted in exceptional circumstances, the sources told the BBC. There have been occasions over the years where human remains have been found above the ground in the cemetery, and we have reverently reinterred them as close to the original grave as possible. That's a lot of work for volunteers like Reverend Simon Schuler, who has been forced to carry out regular patrols to pick up stray bones, store them, and reinter them into a new grave. Do you think it's easy to find volunteers for that job?
No.
Can you imagine posting an ad for that in the paper? Person wanted to look for random bones and body parts, limited pay and benefits, but with the opportunity of finding rings, jewellery and the odd gold tooth.
I think I've seen that on Craigslist before.
I have seen bones in graveyards because they do eventually reach the surface, and there are foxes and badgers, so when I've toured graveyards...
My very first fox I ever saw in England, or in my
had
life...
Had a bone in its mouth.
...was in the graveyard.
In the graveyard.
Yep.
So, you know, it's not uncommon to wander around and see bits of pieces lying around, and... As I said, I'm not sure I'd want to volunteer to do that job, to be perfectly honest. I did find a shoe once, which was quite disturbing. I didn't look to see what was in it, but I ran home for my tea. It says, because the sets or dens are under the grave, they're not allowed to bury their bones in the rightful place. They have to then reinter them somewhere else. I've been told to carry out a monthly bone patrol to collect them all up. I've seen some Stearns County women on a Saturday night doing something very similar. collect them up and reinter them into a new grave. It is ridiculous, he says. If I decided to dig up a grave to build an extension for the church or something, there would be hell to pay. Yet here we have a situation where bones are being scattered at the whim of someone sitting in an office miles away. Although locals like Reverend Schola have a bone to pick with the grave-robbing badgers, help could be on its way by this summer. The Swindon Town Council is looking into building one-way doors at the opening of sets that would allow the badger to exit, but not to get back inside.
Aww.
The problem with that, of course, is that badgers dig holes. So if you block one entrance, surely all it's got to do is re-dig another one, I would suggest. On the theme of the benefit of one-way doors, I would like to mention this story. Police say a North Carolina man is dead after he accidentally drank from a jar of gasoline and then smoked a cigarette. Havelock Police received a 911 call about 9:55 p.m. on Monday after 43-year-old Gary Allen Banning set himself on fire. Banning was transported to UNC Burns Center in Chapel Hill, where he died early Tuesday morning. City spokeswoman Diane Miller said investigators believe Banning was at a friend's apartment when he apparently mistook a jar of gasoline sitting by the kitchen sink for a beverage. After taking a gulp, he spat the gas out, but got some on his clothes. Sometimes later, investigators say Banning went outside to smoke a cigarette and burst into flames. Havelock Police and the City Fire Marshal are continuing their investigation. It does not say what happened to the innocent bystanders that were standing behind him when Mr. Banning lit his first cigarette. Is this something that happens a lot in the South?
In the South?
Do people keep receptacles of gasoline in their sink? Why would you keep gasoline in your sink in a cup? I find that remarkable.
I have never heard of anything like that. I have no idea. What do you got left? We've only got a couple more minutes
left. I have one story left, which is fabulous. Finally, we realise that with so many unemployed and at the height of the worst recession in modern history, scientists are still being paid for research like the following. Women who have just finished ovulating are better at detecting snakes than at other times of their menstrual cycle, according to an unusual study that sheds light on inbuilt reflexes for survival. Scientists are being paid for this, you do realise this. Nobuo Masakata of Japan's Kyoto University tested 60 healthy women of childbearing age at three different phases of their cycle. They will simultaneously show 9 pictures, one of which was a snake among flowers, while the other ones were just flowers. Ooh. See how cunning that is. The volunteers were tested on how quickly they spotted the serpent. The fastest women were those in the so-called luteal phase of their menstrual cycle, or the stage that immediately follows ovulation. The study strengthens theories that we have a fear reflex, or an innate response to threat signals such as potentially poisonous snakes. Previous researchers found this trait amongst infants aged as young as 8 months, and even among non-human primates. Among women, the reflex seems to be influenced by hormone levels at a stage when they could be pregnant, and thus be more protective towards their fetus, the study says. It could contribute to women's ability to increase their vigilance towards biologically relevant threatening stimuli around themselves during this period of possible pregnancy, it says. The paper was published last Thursday in the British Journal of Scientific Reports, a journal that's never far from my coffee table. And this provides us with useful knowledge that if I am ever stranded in the jungle after being wished up on a distant shore, the woman in the luteal phase of their cycle goes first. Never let it be said that we are not informative and have your safety and well-being high on our list of priorities here on Sitter Spell Radio.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Lee.
It is my pleasure.
We, unfortunately, are out of time. We don't have enough time for spell intel, but I've got spells up there on my website.
Are you suggesting I've talked too much?
No, honey.
That's a very rare occurrence.
No, not you. Not ever. Not you.
There we go.
Mr. Adrian Lee, my handsome husband, I love you.
And my wife, who's currently missing an experience in irony.
Remember, go to my website, empoweringthedivine.com. I've got all your spells up there for you.
Can we get dressed now and have a cup of tea?
We can have a cup of tea.
Fabulous. It's cold today with nothing on.
Shh, don't tell them what we're doing. Bear. Bear's right there. Happy what's coming up,
Happy what's coming up to everyone. I've got special cards for happy what's coming up.
You do.
You can buy them online. Prints and cards have pushed them and Hallmark.
At empoweringthedivine.com?
Yeah, happy what's coming up day.
What is it? St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I've got a song for Anne. Anne, you asked for this song. This is for you. I will see you all next week, and don't forget to take back the light. Goodbye, my darlings.
Goodbye.
Many hundreds of years in Highlands of Scotland, men have given up wearing trousers and have taken to wearing the skirts or the kilts. But nevertheless, these kilted boys in the last war were named the ladies from hell. So you have to be terrible careful if you ever get curious about the kilts. Never ask them, Donald, where's your trousers?
Yep. Let the wind blow, hey, let the wind blow, low. Through the streets of the kilt I go. All the lassies say hello. Donald, where's your trousers?
I just come down from the Isle of Skye. I'm not anything and I'm awfully shy. The lassie says I go by. Donald, where's your trousers?
Whoop.
Let the wind blow, hey, let the wind blow, low. Through the streets of the kilt I go. All the lassies say hello. Donald, where's your trousers? To a fancy ball, and it was slippery in the hall, and I was feared that I might fall. Was a handy on my crow.
Whoop!
Let the wind blow, hey, let the wind blow, low. Through the streets of McKilt I go. All the lassies say hello. Donald, where's your trousers? Let the wind blow, hey, let the wind blow, low. Through the streets of the kilt I go. All the lassies say hello. Donald, where's your trousers? Now I went down to London town to have a little fun on the underground. The ladies turned their heads around, said, Donald, where are your trousers? Let the wind blow, hey, let the wind blow, low. Through the streets of the kilt I go. All the lassies say hello. Donald, where's your trousers?
The window,
hail in the window, low. Through the streets of the kilt I go. All